welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for being here. And happy season finale. That's right. We're wrapping up season two today, and it's been a fantastic season. Thank you all for making it so great. I hope you have learned as much as I have. Season three will hopefully come either winter 2021 or spring of 2022, which I know will sound so far away. But if you haven't heard, I'm pregnant with my second child, who is due April 2021. So I'll be taking the summer off after that, and either during that maternity leave, I'll do some episodes, or I will start as soon as I'm back at work. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But so make sure you're following the podcast on Facebook or Instagram or both, because I'll stay active on there, sharing tidbits and tricks along the way, best practices. Just anything that comes to mind, I'll make sure to post it on there, and also share when I'm starting interviews for season three. However, for our season finale, I have Laura Sue, who's a lead teacher now at Texas in the elementary area. So she shares some great ideas on how to incorporate the nonverbal communication in areas where that seems impossible. If you don't know, nonverbal communication is the most influential. It makes us approachable, it lowers conflicts, it enforces and promotes positive relationships. It's powerful. So how do we do that in a virtual world? Well, without further ado, here's Laura.
My name is Laura Sue Carl, and I live in Texas. I teach for a K-12 school called Texas Online Preparatory School. I am in the elementary, or on the elementary campus. I have taught with K-12 for 6 years now, and 4 of those years, I was 5th grade English Language Arts, and then this last year, I became a lead teacher, which on our campus, we don't have assistant principals, and so we have 2 lead teachers, and so we basically do kind of assistant principal things, but then also really focused on working with the teachers and teaching what needs to be taught, what is kind of left. And so this year we were doing PE and health, and this next year we're going to be focusing on writing for all of our grade levels. So really excited about that and to be able to give that to our students. I've taught a total of 10 years with my brick and mortar, included with a short stint in the middle doing HR for a company. But I've been married for 11 years. My husband was in the Navy, so for a little bit I was teaching in Japan while we lived there. And we have one boy. He's 4 years old, and he keeps me entertained and very busy. So besides going to school myself, teaching school, and my son, that is pretty much what I do.
I love all that. Other than the Navy, sounds like we have a lot in common. I've been here for 5 years, taught brick and mortar for 3 years, took a short break in the middle, and was a nanny / homeschool teacher / a secretary at my husband's church, and we've been married for 12 years, just a couple days ago in July. So, but we're here to talk about communication, and I'm so excited. And so there's 2 Texas schools, I guess I want to be clear. You're at Tops or?
Yes. Okay. I'm at Tops, and then there's, TEVA, which is, Texas Virtual Academy of Hallsville.
Okay. And they just serve Hallsville, or is that?
No, they serve all of Texas, but they're just connected to Hallsville ISD, and my school's connected Huntsville ISD.
I got it. Okay. My school's not connected to anybody. We're just our own. So,
it's amazing how it works different in each state.
That's why I asked, how's it? Okay. So strong communication. We'll talk about, both as a directed to a teacher, like an administrator, or among teachers back and forth, how maybe teachers should communicate with their bosses, or their principals or lead teachers, you know, to make sure that we're communicating well. And then also, most importantly, how teachers can communicate to their students and those learning coaches. And I say this often, we have some really struggling students, at least in Oklahoma we do, and from other teachers that I've talked to, they also have struggling students. It seems to be the higher portion of their case load. And with that tends to come parents who are also struggling and low socioeconomic. So I feel like our communication needs to be very strong and very clear. And so that's why I'm excited to talk to you about this. So one of my first questions or observations through my research was verbal versus nonverbal. And according to research, nonverbal communication is the most influential. And so in a virtual world, how can we make sure nonverbal communication is visible? And so nonverbal meaning like facial expressions, eye behavior, gestures, body movement, touch, voice quality. How can we make sure that we're using all of those in our emails, on our phone calls, in class? What are your thoughts there?
Well, as I was putting down notes just of things I wanted to talk about with you or, you know, say to you, I found myself thinking like, okay, this is my golden rule, or this is the most important, like 50 times. But, okay, well, maybe just communication altogether is important. But one of the biggest things, and it goes for learning coaches, it goes for students, for talking to your teachers, or even administrators talking to each other. If you don't, and I say this to the kids all the time, like, if you don't tell me, I won't know. And that's just something that's going to happen in the virtual world. If you don't tell me you're struggling, I can't help you. If you don't tell me that something happened in the chat box, I can't help. For my teachers, if you don't tell me that this is going on, not trying to get too personal in your life if you don't want to, but tell me something's happening so I can either help or support you. But just being virtual, if you don't let others know, if you don't communicate, you can't get the help or the support you need. So that's really important. My undergrad is in communication studies, so it was all about the theories, and nonverbal communication is huge. And I know people can't see me, but I talk with my hands. I feel like teachers are performers at heart. I think we need that, and it's how I talk. So nonverbal is huge for me. So coming online, my first year teaching online, we were not required to be on camera, which I thought was fantastic. And it went well, but then the next year they kind of encouraged it. And so I got on camera more, and I found I wanted to teach on camera. I wanted them to see me. I want to see them. And that's something, especially like with Zoom, we're moving towards being able to see our students during class also and see those nonverbals, or at least let them, you know, make funny faces at us if they want to. Because in elementary school, that's something that I miss, is being able to just see their faces while teaching. I think when it comes to emails and phone calls, there are ways to ensure that your message is coming across or that your intent is coming across correctly. It's really hard to, when you take out that nonverbal part. So I think getting on camera is important. I think just communicating in general, letting everybody know what is going on, students, parents, with your teachers, I guess having that, can't think of the word, not invisibility, but clarity, having it to where everybody knows what's happening. That's really important. And then also staying in contact through the emails and the text messages, but not being afraid to pick up that phone and make that phone call, because there's nothing like hearing someone else's voice. And there can be so many miscommunications when it comes to text and email. And so, I guess for an online teacher, my advice to you is, you know, make sure that everybody knows where they can reach you and that they are trying to reach out to you, but getting on camera as much as possible, or in Zoom. I've pulled parents into Zoom before. I'm like, hey, just come in here and let's turn on the cameras and let's have our conversation. And it's helped a lot. And then I could also share resources, but getting on camera and being face to face, and not being afraid to pick up the phone and talk to them, because that was another thing my first year that I didn't do as much as I should have. And I've seen a world of difference. I'm more apt to pick up the phone and call a parent just like, hey, you sent this email. I just want to clarify. Here's what I have. It really does make a big difference.
I can't agree with you more. I remember my first year, like you, I think we started probably around the same time, or started a year after you. It was almost discouraged indirectly to use your camera because of distractions and your background or the fan, you know, whatever. And so I didn't, because you can see, but no one else can, as far as this podcast goes. But I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff here. And so I clean it up during the school year. But my point is that I was like, well, I have a family, you know, like you, I have a kid, I have a son. And at that time he was home, he wasn't in school. And so it's just like, I just won't. And so a few years passed, in that first class, I was state testing them, and I had lost like 40 pounds, and that didn't matter because they didn't see me anyway. The camera was off, but that I was state testing that class, who are now like in eighth grade or whatever grade. And they recognize my voice and they're like, Mrs. Ring. And I was like, yeah. And then I looked at the roster, cause I hadn't looked at it, and I recognized all their names. And it made me so sad that they recognized my voice before my face, and that I didn't recognize them because I had never seen their faces. And so that next year I was all in on the webcam. I didn't care if it caused a delay. I would just flip it off and then turn it back on to minimize that delay if there was one, because I wanted them to know me. And what I found is that it raised my level of proximity. And so in a traditional classroom, I would just walk over. If a kid was being naughty or distracted, I would just walk over to them. And so I don't have that, but having my camera on, I remember one of my first classes with the camera on, they were like, can you see me? Like, no, I can't see you. You don't have your camera on. So, but they fully believe that I could see into their living room or wherever they're at. And that changed everything. So I also found, as you mentioned, nonverbal reduces conflict. So just picking up that phone, some emails just don't come across well, or some texts don't come across well, even with your best intentions in mind. So having them hear your tone of voice and being an active listener to create those facial expressions and eye behaviors for them, it really reduces that conflict, promotes positive relationships, encourages communication between each other, and it makes you approachable. And that's between the first year of not using webcams to now using webcams, I feel like I was always approachable, but my families didn't know that. And so now they do. And I love that. So let's talk about emails for a minute. I use a lot of emojis when it comes to text, or it either in emails or on text, I guess, and on the phone. And I've used Bitmojis as well. Is there any other thing that we could potentially use to make ourselves visible in those traditionally non-visible things?
So being in school, I use Grammarly a lot. And what I love about Grammarly now is they have started putting a little emoji down in the corner, like the bottom right corner, and it tells you the how your
business
email.
Casual I remember writing a very happy paragraph, and it was like, this sounds sad. I'm like, okay.
I was like, I want to know what you're but yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it'll show like however the face feels is how your email's coming across. And so I do love that. I love the little nerdy one that comes up with the glasses. I'm like, that when I'm typing a paper, I'm like, yes, that is me. And so I love emojis. I really want that to come across, but I have been known to use too many exclamation points, because I feel like that makes it happy, or the emojis, or the Bitmojis. Love my Bitmoji. Oh, I do. And so being in elementary school, I think that's different too. I think we can use that. I do try with the students I'll let them know. I'm like, okay, so this is our casual email. So I'm using the emojis and you can too, but then we'll practice writing like a professional email as well. And so you don't use the bitmoji or you don't use your emojis during that. Watch the exclamation points. And so, well, exclamation points can be misinterpreted also.
I know. I'm like, they could probably think that you're yelling.
I'm just really excited to talk to you. So something that we started doing is, teachers are required to be on camera at least the first few minutes of class when they're introducing themselves. I live in a very rural area. Some of our teachers do as also. And so I get that internet gets glitchy. And so we're like, okay, then you can turn it off. But at least let them see your face first thing at the beginning of class. So they can even just picture you while you're teaching. I'm always amazed. I like seeing into people's houses or seeing their face in the morning. And so when it comes to the communication part, at the beginning of the year, and our school has different cohorts. And so really until February, it's like every 2 weeks, there's a new group of students that come in or the open enrollment. And so at the beginning of the year, it's a lot. And then the open enrollment, every 2 weeks, the teachers have a little group that they have to reach out to. But you, before the student starts, we are having our teachers call them, our advisors calling them, our principal, me and the other lead teacher are calling people as well, because we want them to hear our voices, know that we're real people, know that we're here to support them. But we also have a place that we take notes, and we share those notes with any teacher that has that student or that family. And it can be academic notes, it can be really important things like this family is moving, or I remember when we had Hurricane Harvey down here, that it was a huge thing. It's like, you know, this family's still in a hotel. Mrs. Carl's still not in her home for 2 weeks. Like it was a good place to share information without having to send an email or call the other teachers. And so,
and did you keep this like in an Excel or on like SharePoint or something like that?
We use, and I always call it the wrong, I don't know if it's Office 360 or Office 365, but one of those. It's, I can look. No, I don't have it up. Sorry. But we use that, our whole school does. And so everybody has access to it. And we just make I call it a live document. I don't know if that's what it's called, or a living document. And it's an Excel spreadsheet. And so we have every student by grade level. Each tab is a grade level. We have every student on there, and we have each week. And we also use that to make sure we're making connections with everybody. Pretty much every 2 weeks, we want you to have talked to all of your students in your homeroom, whether it's in class or it's a phone call or even a text if some families prefer text, but just talking to everybody, making a connection, making sure everything's okay, and that they know you're there. Because in a brick and mortar, they would be seeing you. I mean, if a kid didn't come in for 2 weeks and you didn't hear anything from anybody, you'd be concerned. And the same thing goes in the virtual world as well. So this is our way to do it. So it's running. It's throughout the whole school year. And the very first week of school, you are reaching out to everybody in your homeroom. I think it's either by the first day of school or it's within that first week, which is really like 3 days for us. And I think that's a good time to kind of fill out the family. Like, are these going to be casual conversations? Are they very, you know, business-like? This is what they want. And that's the place that I'll put like, okay to use bitmojis, or okay to use your emoji, or mom, you know, said this, or even in their first email that they send back to you, you can kind of get the feeling of it, of how the conversation should go. But anytime that our teachers receive emails, I try, and it's hard. It's hard for me to do this, but I'll tell them, you need to assume positive intent. I don't care if that person is typed in all caps and they have exclamation points all through it. If your little Grammarly thing is showing a very mean, bad face, you assume positive intent and call that person. If you get an email like that, you call them and it's just like, hey, what's going on? Because it's not going to help if you get angry. It's not going to help if you send back an email in all caps. And I understand. There's been times that I'm like, hey, like I'm doing my best here. Why are you yelling at me? Well, I'll call and the learning coach will be like, my caps is on, it's like on and I can't turn it off. I'm like, oh, let me help you with that. Like, you weren't yelling at me this whole time. So it's good to use those. But nothing will be picking up the phone and calling them. And I would say at least every 2 weeks, you need to be talking to all of your students, which depending on how many you have or how your school.
I was going to say, it depends on how many you have. But, I definitely make connections in class. So I might not be calling them every 2 weeks, but in class, I'm like, how's your cat that got out yesterday? Where did you guys find it? You know, like during those before class starts or at the very end, you know, wherever I try to tie that stuff in. So, I could have more on all that. Go ahead.
It's something that stood out to me. I think it was about 2 years ago, but I remember learning in class, talking to this one student, which when I would call that learning coach, I knew it was going to be like an hour conversation. You get some that are 5 minutes, you get some that are an hour and you know who they are. And so you budget the time for it. But I love talking to her mom. And then the student in class was telling me about her pie, that she had this award-winning pie. And she did. At all the county fairs, she'd submit this pie and like win. So it was award-winning. And she told me about it. Well, I put that in her notes. Just she has a fair coming up. She's putting in her apple pie. It's award-winning. Just little notes. Well, then our principal called. And was like, hey, you know, I heard that you were submitting your award-winning pie. How did it go? And the student, the mom called me. She's like, did you tell, I'm not gonna say her name, but did you tell the principal that this is happening? I was like, oh, I just shared it with the teacher. She's like, it made her day that the principal knew about her pie. And I'm like, it's the little things. And that, she said that they didn't have connections like that in brick and mortar. And I really do feel closer to my students. And maybe this just works for me here, but I feel closer to my students now than I did in brick and mortar, just because I had to use these other forms of communication and not just rely on seeing that body come into the room and, you know, seeing their face. So while there's positive and negatives to both or with the nonverbal, but I think in the virtual world, you can use these other things to fill in those gaps of what is missing and sometimes make deeper connections and relationships.
I completely agree. And I think it's because, and I've said this once, and I'll probably say it 1,000 times more, but we go into their world. We're meeting them right where they're at. They can't be fake. I remember I would keep my home life at home and at my school. Some kids are just completely different. I remember during my second year or third year in a traditional school, I was at a parent-teacher conference and I was telling the parent how much I love their kid and how good of a student he is and how well-behaved he is. And they're like, you've got to be talking about the wrong kid. And like, no, Logan, he's awesome. You know, and I looked at my notes and I'm like, yeah, I got the right notes out. Like, and the kid's right there at the table at the parent-teacher conference. I'm like, no, yeah, he's an incredible kid. I'm very proud of him, and so should you. And they're like, that is not how he acts at all. So I really feel like one of the contributing factors as to why we have these deep conversations or deep connections with our kids is because they don't have the opportunity to be fake. And on the other end, during testing this past year, just at the end of year benchmarks that we do online, I had one kid sleeping. I required them to turn on their webcams and share their screens and such like that. So I was just popping from room to room, and this kid fell asleep between like the 5 or 6, you know, whatever minutes from me going from just down the list. And like, I don't know. I needed to have a shirt on, which is fine. Normally that happens. And, but my point is there's this great end of the spectrum where you have these really awesome conversations with these kids and you get to see their world like you and the pie. But then you also see where these kids are really struggling and in a way that you might not ever. And he wasn't at a desk. He was on the floor and just, he fell asleep. And I both giggled because I was like, okay. But at the same time, it broke my heart that this kid doesn't have a place where he can work and a place where he can thrive. And what can I do to communicate to him and his learning coach to help change that? So with COVID and stuff like that, it really threw a wrench in how we operate and how I and like new kids and such like that. So anyway, I hope that doesn't happen again, but I felt like I didn't communicate super well with that family and gonna do better next year. So
it's hard though. I mean, that's another part of being online. It's hard because you don't meet them face to face. So you don't get a feel. And if you can't get the parent on the phone or to respond to email or to text or see them in Zoom or get the kid to turn the camera on, I mean, you can't reach through and be like, turn on your camera or, you know, wake up. But that there are limitations and it's frustrating. But I have seen in my 6 years a huge change. And I don't know if that's just the change in people that are coming in and being more open to online school. I don't know how many times I say, I am a real teacher. I have a real job. This is a real school. Like, you're really going to learn. And
was that you that mentioned that? And I was like, I have a kid. Right. Was that you? That
I think it yeah. was. That's your sticker.
Yeah. I had a kid I had a kid or a family tell me that I wasn't a real teacher because of because of the mindset of what charter schools are. And they're not always certified teachers. But I remember looking up at my my certification on the wall and my little new teacher of the year award, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure
I mean, I went to school, got certified, we take state tests. I mean, yeah. It's a school. You do have to wake up for this. You do have to come. I'm just in very comfortable clothes and I love it.
So I love all that about how to be visible using our nonverbals, because that can be challenging. So webcam, Bitmojis when appropriate. One of the other things I think is going to help is we're changing how we send our newsletters. OVCA is using S'more, and so those will be direct links, and the email S'more just looks fun. So I'm hoping that communicates well. I think sometimes black on white emails just might have a negative mindset for some families. So I'm hoping that will be a nonverbal and they'll be more inclined to read it and be informed. And another thing, going back to our doctorate, I'm in the intro. I know you're further in, but this intro class is all about why are you doing this? How she should do this. And one of the things that I remember reading was make sure your readers don't have to look anything up, be super clear. And I took that as, okay, so I need to pretend like everyone just doesn't know anything. So I think that's still applicable in our environment. Let's pretend that our families have no idea about anything, not say like pretend they're dumb because they're intelligent, presume that positive, but try not to use jargon. Try not to, just explain things, and but also be concise with another thing. I'm like, so I need to be super clear but concise, make it simple. So I think that fits in here too. So in our emails, be concise but be clear. And do you have anything to add to that?
It goes back to knowing your families too, because that's, you're right though, like you have to explain things. Even just the jargon. So I would send an email or even calling a parent like, hey, log into the OLS, go click on this. And they're like, what's the OLS? Well, in my little teacher heart, I'm like, you've been here since August. You don't know what the OLS is. That's our platform.
What do you call it?
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, how people interpret things or what people call things. And they're like, oh, the website. I was like, yes, the website. Okay, good. We're not starting over. I've had some of those. But I'm like, okay, I need to watch what I say, or I need to call it, even calling it the correct thing. Something, this is kind of silly, but you know, we use Skype. Well, when I started, it was Link. And so yes. I still call it Link. And everybody who was here during that time, call it Link. And so I'm like, hey, link me. Or, you know, I'll be on Link. I'm not going to be at my computer. And we had two new teachers this year, and I felt so bad because I'd be like, you know, turn on your link. And this one was gone for a long time. And finally I called her on their cell phone. I was like, hey, you know, do you need help? What's going on? And she's like, I don't have link and I'm trying to download and I can't find it. I was like, your Skype. Like, we were just talking. And she just goes, oh, I was like, I am so, like, that is on me. I am so sorry. So sorry about that. I forgot your question.
It's fine. I was about to add on to that and how sometimes I want to call it MSN Messenger for us millennial kids.
AOL. I'll
get to that. But that's what I tell people when they ask me, like, well, how do you communicate to your, because we can't just walk down the hall to our co-teacher's room. Like, yeah. Well, I use this thing called Skype, or, you know, Skype, but even in normal Skype isn't like Skype for business is different than just Skype. And right. So I'm like, it's like a AOL Messenger or MSN Messenger or Yahoo Messenger, depending on the region you lived in.
I had all of those.
I had all three.
With my MySpace. it's so true. Well, and just throwing this in there because you just said it, going back to relationships, I messaged my principal and the other lead teacher the other day. I was like, I miss y'all. Like, I haven't talked to you in like a week and I don't know what to do. And Friday, me and the lead teacher and two other teachers are going to have just a game night. We're just going to log on in Zoom.
We're going to play like,
but I miss them. I mean, they're my people. And now I've met all of them in person. I have met all of them in person, but there's some you don't meet. And it's just like, you just build these connections and they're part of your world. And last summer we drove to Colorado and on the way we passed through my principal's town and we stopped. It was me, my mom, my son, and my husband. We stopped and had lunch in their house and played for a little bit. It was a nice break. And I, when I introduced him, I was like, see, these people are real. Like, this is my principal. This is my mom.
I'm a real boy.
Right. Real teacher, real school, real people. And I think that's something that people don't understand. And I remember when online school, like higher education online was not seen as real. Online dating wasn't seen as real. And I feel like people date online more now than they do in person. And
I love TikTok date nights. People like those. I love watching those. So
those are fun things to
do. Those are great.
But something I do remember now. I remember what you're talking about. But I have families that you have to learn it. You sometimes learn it through problems you have with, or, you know, problems that occur. But I have families that they just want like bullet points and I'll send them bullet points. I'm like, hey, this, let me know if you need help. And then I have others that I am screenshotting, like, this is the test. This is the button. This is where, you know, he missed it. And so you have to know, because the parents that want bullet points, if you send them screenshots, sometimes they're like, you know, do you think I'm an idiot? It's like, no, I do not. I just wanted you to see what I'm talking about because we're not there.
I just want to be super clear over here.
Right.
So I want to make sure that we're on the same page. So
assume positive intent from me, please, because I am just being positive. So you have to fill out everybody. But I think you're right that you have to kind of start with being overly descriptive and clear on everything and then work your way as you build your relationship if that's not what they need.
Yeah. And so I guess when I said that, I was thinking more just like those general emails that you send out to everyone, like, hey, we're taking a test next week and this is the email and this is the website you should go to. But you bring up a phenomenal point of those individual emails when they reply back, like, I need some screenshots. So, or, you know, whatever it may be. So, but it goes back to building that relationship of when you used your nonverbals to create, to be approachable. So kudos to them and kudos to you for making yourself approachable so they can ask those questions or reply back and not just be like, I have no idea what she's talking about. I'm not even gonna reply back to that because that happens.
That happens too. Yeah.
So this kind of lead into my next question. We as individuals, as people, we tend to care more about openness than anything else as far as communication goes. Openness being like honest and sharing information, both personal and professional. How can we convey openness with our students and parents and admin. So this kind of goes way back when you talked about you don't know what's going on unless they tell you. But how can we convey openness to make ourselves more approachable so that way families do share, become, so families and students become more open? How can we, sorry, I'm making this long, but I'm trying to shorten it and make it concise. How can we as teachers make ourselves open so we can encourage openness back? I guess that's the best way I want to say that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I think the first thing is calling them so they hear your voice, turning on the camera so that they see you. So, like, you are a real person. You are there. And I might be too open. I try not to be, but sometimes as I'm talking, I'm like, I might not should be sharing this, or they don't need to know this. So many times I'll start things and maybe it's like a self-preservation. I'm protecting myself, but I'm like, you probably don't need to know this, or you probably don't care, but, and then I lead into my story. But I think sharing information with them beyond just, because I don't know if you have like the welcoming slide like we do, but we'll have pictures of our family and we'll tell a little bit about ourselves, and then we lead into this is what you can expect in class. And I think it's going beyond that. When I talk to a family and they're like, the reason, one of the questions we ask them is, you know, why did you choose TOPS, or why did you choose online learning? And a lot of times we have that it fits their lifestyle, or this is just what they've always done or what they wanted to do. But we have a lot that it's, I was bullied in school, or I have anxiety, or I have something else leading to it. And so for me, and this is something I do in real life too, but it's trying to make that connection with them and have that like shared meaning or this shared history, build a shared history if I can. And so a lot of them will say, you know, my kid has testing anxiety. I'm like, I did too. I mean, I cried pretty much every day in math from eighth grade till I graduated. And I chose my undergrad because I had to have one semester of math. Like, that was the big draw for me. And so I get it. I understand. I'm here as the teacher. I'm going to help your kiddo. Or, you know, we live in Lubbock. Awesome. Our principal lives near Lubbock. You know, y'all might be at the same testing site, helping them to feel that connection with you from the beginning, finding something you have in common. For me, something that I guess creates like a very easy opening is military families. And in Texas, we have a lot. And so the moment they're like, we're in the military, especially if they were Navy, I'm like, hey, I was too. Then we start talking. I've had people that we know people in common, or we're stationed near the same place. And I think it immediately opens people up when you find that something in common that you have. And it may take you sharing personal things. Now, don't share too much like I do, but don't be afraid either. Do you? Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm not a
polished. I have a story, and I remember sharing when my mom passed away in 2018 with that particular class. They were wondering why I was gone, because when she passed away during Christmas break, but I didn't come back until after second semester. So like a couple weeks into the second semester, like mid-January, like, where were you? You know, because they didn't want to, my coworkers didn't want to tell them because they wanted me to share that. And I remember thinking, should I share this? Should I share this with my fourth graders that my mom passed away? And I just went with it. It was probably an overshare. But I'm so glad I did, because that same year, later on, one of my kids lost their dad. And I was able to grieve with that kid. And that kid was able to grieve with me. And being open with that, and it might have been an overshare. It might have been too much for some kids, but for that kid, that one kid who lost his dad at such a young age, I can't even imagine losing my mom in fourth grade. I can't imagine losing her now, and it's happened. But I remember I was so glad that I was open and I was vulnerable with my class, because they cared so much about me. Their hearts hurt for me, and then that kid was able to communicate that instead of just hiding and be like, I'm sorry, I'm not doing my work, and not share why, because I was then able to just sit with him in a breakout room and we both cried, And after that, he still struggled. Obviously, I'm still struggling, but he was able to pick himself back up. And I think it was because someone else outside of their outside of his immediate family understood how he felt. And I was so glad I was able to do that for him. And it helped me. And I think of Brené Brown, I think of this book study whenever this drops, it's going to be after that. But Brené Brown's constantly talking about being open and vulnerable and how that builds connections. And I guess to all virtual teachers, don't really think about what you share before, but also just don't share either. Share about your life, share about your kids. My students love when Dustin's home sick, and because then he sits with me in class, and they love that. They think he's so cute. So, and that builds connection. So,
I love that, because you created, even through computers, you created a safe place for that child and even the other ones. And it's a part of life. So they're going to lose people through their lives. And I can guarantee you, what, no matter their age, they're going to think about you. They're going to think about that moment that this adult, this authority figure in their life, shared that with them. And, you know, I don't know what y'all talked about, but I know that made a huge
impact. We mainly didn't talk about anything. It was just me saying, you know my story. I lost my mom in December. This is terrible. I'm so sorry. And then that was really it. And he's just like, yeah. This is a totally different sidebar, but but it still goes along the lines of communication. The main thing I learned when I was going through my depression with my grief was, you don't necessarily have to say anything other than that that's terrible. And you can be, as adults, you could say whatever you want to say, but I'm not going to promote that. But I'm just saying, like, you can be as extreme or as low as that. Like, that's terrible. What can I do? What can I do for you? And that was basically all I said to this kid. And there wasn't anything I could do per se, but just being there and being open, being willing to do whatever I can. And I think I said something along the lines like, if I can do it, I will. If I can do that, whatever you want me to do, if I can do it, I will. But if I can't, then I'll try to find another solution.
I often will say, like, oh, I understand. And sometimes I do. And even yesterday, it's like, because it was the first time I was like, you know what? Because I almost said, oh, I understand. I was like, you know what? I don't understand. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry this is happening to you. But,
and that's the best thing you can say. And that's, even I lost my mom. Like, but I'm like, although I lost my mom,
it was different.
I still don't understand what you're going through, because I'm not in fourth grade. Like, I can't imagine that, buddy. And I'm so sorry that this has happened. And this is terrible. What can I do for you? And that was the gist of our conversation.
We touch so many. I'm in Texas, so we thousands of kids, and we're touching all these lives across the state, people that I never would have interacted with otherwise, just because of where we live. And I think it's amazing that we can be a part of their life. But going back to your example, that student was able to come to you virtually, come to you, and you have that moment. You gave him that safe place, and you gave him this other person to talk to or to grieve with, and then he was able to go back into his world. So even though we're going into their world, we're also giving them a place to kind of like take a break or take a moment outside of what they're living in. And you know, your situation, there's been so many things that were so eye-opening to me. It's amazing to me. And I love the online world. I understand some teachers, some students, they need that brick and mortar. They need that face-to-face in person. I'm not discounting either of them. I think you have to find what's right though for you as a teacher, and you have to find what's right for the student, and being open to those things and hearing things like your podcast, this happens. These are things that we deal with, and it's amazing and it's wonderful, but you know, there's also the limitations. I went down my little rabbit hole, but I think it's great.
That's what this is about. It's just a conversation. I love that. So, and I feel like we had a lot of things without actually addressing a direct question, which I love. But I guess my last question would be is, so in my research, I found that there's some overlaps, and this is specifically for parents and I guess teachers, how we can influence these things for our parents to do. There's some overlaps of spheres of influence where first parenting, communicating, volunteering, learning at home, which our families are doing, decision-making and collaborating with the community. How as teachers could we communicate these spheres to increase more influence? Because the more influence our parents have in their kids' lives, the higher attendance and the higher their grades. They make more academic gains, they attend more things. So to go through those again, parenting, communicating, volunteering, learning from home, which we do, we don't need to talk about that one, and decision-making, collaborating with community. How as teachers could we help our families, how could we communicate those to our families to increase those spheres of influence? So yeah, I think that's it.
Well, when people ask me about online learning, especially right now, I try not to be this person, but they're like, oh, I'm looking into homeschooling. Like, that's great. Our kids are at home and they're schooling, but they're not homeschooled. Like, right. It is different.
We're from home.
Right. And I'm like, I understand that sounds very silly, but you'll get it. Once you're in it, you understand that it is different. I mean, these students are being taught by certified teachers. They're taking the state standardized test if it's required. And it is very different. So when I say that, I'm like, but also in the elementary school, especially the learning coach or the parent involvement, you take on a lot more than you would in a brick and mortar. It's just the way that it is. We have our parents are grading some of the writing. They're not entering attendance anymore, but they used to enter attendance. You have to stay on top of your students. In Texas, it can only start at third grade. So, but you got to think these are third, fourth, and fifth graders. And until I see them on camera, sometimes I forget how little they are. But you can't just sit a third grader down in front of a computer and say, do your work.
I'm like, if you walked into a traditional classroom and you saw your kid in a classroom in front of a computer without an adult in the room, you would be furious. And right. Add that there.
Well, and so like you're saying, we've got the schooling or the learning at home thing down. That's built into it. But you have to have that parent involvement. And that's something I think we got added in. I don't know if it's before, I think it had to be before they enroll, like when people are reaching out and asking or reaching out to our call centers and getting information, it's like you are taking on this responsibility. They sign things saying that, you know, I will be involved. I will help with this. I will watch, you know, check things. And I've had in the past where I've had to pull up that document. I'm like, you signed this. And did you read it? Because you have to be involved in your students' learning, and you're going to be involved a lot more than you would in the brick and mortar. I say that a lot more than you would have to be if they were in brick and mortar. I know parents are involved, but not as much.
But they're not normally taking on the teacher.
Exactly.
I say that they're more of a teacher assistant. So they're assisting me in reaching their goals, their kids' goals. So I think, I think that document is a great start to increasing the, I guess, parenting aspect of it and communicating. Because I think also we have a similar document. It says like you will reply back to emails within 24 hours of, whatever. So I think that's a great start. Something else that we do is at the very beginning of the year, we have we call it a bison boot camp, and we try to communicate a lot of those things. Something in addition that we're doing this next coming year is a learning coach university that they're going to have to go through. Is that something you guys are doing too?
Yes, and it has helped immensely. And I think it helps them to feel better because they actually get to see some of the things, but they also, we have like recordings they can refer back to if they need to. And it's another chance for them to start to meet the people that they can reach out to and rely on. And I describe it to parents, but I'm like, we're a triangle, and you and me, our goal is your student's best interests, you know, but the best education possible for your student. But we work together. So even though I'm the teacher, we're equal in this. You're there. You can touch your student
and see them. We're an acute triangle, so we are close together.
Definitely not a math person.
Over there, but
yeah, but they're important.
It's not equilateral. It's a
right. Exactly.
You're close.
We're
go
close.
Ahead. Sorry.
No, you're fine. But I think them understanding the responsibility they're taking on by schooling at home, not homeschooling, is important. And that'll help in building that parenting and that involvement. Will help with the communication as well. When it gets to like the volunteering and being a good citizen, I think students seeing us do things or us sharing, going back to the sharing and opening up about our lives. My husband does a lot of things with veterans in our area. And so I'll share things with them. And I think it helps them to see into my role, but also sees that, you know, oh, there's this adult and this is what they're doing and this is why it's important. I think that helps to help them grow as people and not just the student, because that's something, well, as a teacher, you know, but we focus on the whole person. We need to focus on the whole person and not just the student. And so I think modeling that is really important with our students, and something that I share with them, but then I open it up as well as like, because I volunteer in my church and that's something I do. I know that not all of you do that. What are things that you do or what are things in your life? And so just opening it up to everybody, and because we teach kids in all of our state. And so it's very diverse and it's a beautiful learning experience that can occur if you open up for that.
Absolutely. I was thinking more along the lines, but your points are so valid. They can volunteer anywhere and their parents should be encouraging them to volunteer and volunteering with them. But I was also thinking, how could I get my parents to volunteer in my class? Like, how can I get them to come to my class and help me out?
When you figure it out, let me know.
Yeah. Well, one of my first ideas was, because I want to do teaming next year, and so the same kids will be with each other like all year, and it'd be really fun in the beginning to have some parents be a facilitator, and just because I won't be able to be in every single breakout room, and so that was one way I thought, but I don't know the logistics of that. I don't know how that would work because of FERPA and all that, but that was one way. And, that was the only way. That's the only way I could think of as of right now, that they could volunteer in my classroom. And I don't know if that's possible just because of FERPA, but it might be possible. It could be potentially.
Do y'all do any homeroom time or, like we do virtual field trips a lot. That was another thing I got in charge of. Whenever they would have outings, we would have a virtual option as well. And so if I think we're going to try to do like at least one Friday a month, have a virtual field trip. And so I've been gathering resources, but that, you know, because that's when you get parent involvement or even the class parties. We have Valentine's parties or holiday or even I think we had a Halloween.
So how do you get parents to be involved there? Because I've done this before, but it's all on me. So how do you get, or what did the parents do, I guess?
So, I've never had the parent involvement in it, but I was like, when you were talking, I was like, yeah, that's okay, a good idea.
It
I
is
like
a great idea. So at the beginning of the year, I guess we could communicate that we'd love some parent involvement in those activities. Maybe they lead a group through the virtual. I've done like a virtual zoo. So they have like a group of kids that they could go from breakout room to breakout room and talk about those particular animals. That's one idea.
Yeah.
And then with class parties, sometimes I just have games, but it's kind of a free for all. And so parents could potentially help out with a game.
Like if you had the parents that you had taught, like the tool, we are still using Blackboard. We don't get Neuro this year. Not yet. But
in January, you will.
In January?
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. But well, you know, the tools.
You're going to have to because Java is going It's bye-bye. So, so Blackboard Collaborate will just cease to exist after December. So yeah, definitely in January.
Won't miss the prompts to download the newest Java, but no, that'll be that. But if you have the parents that you have taught the tools to and they know how to do it and have them in those breakout rooms with that group, so then it's nothing academic. I guess they're seeing the students' names or hearing them on there, but you just leading or facilitating each of those breakout rooms. Cause you're right. I mean, I've had it before where I was the only one and I had like 10 rooms and I'm trying to go through and, you know, Bobby's coloring on all the pages and then somebody deleted the coloring page.
Absolutely.
And did away with the checker pieces. And I'm just like, we're all coming back to the main room. We're all going to do this together. But instead of getting to that point, having those parents, I love that idea because it gets the parent involvement and that's what you would do anyway. The parents would come in and brick and mortar to the parties or to the outings, the field trips. And I like this idea. I need to take some notes now.
Well, that's the whole point of this. So yeah. All right. Well, we've talked a lot about strong communication, mainly from the, I think the biggest area of need for teachers is mainly for talking to our students and talking to their families. And I'm feeling really good about this conversation, but is there anything else that you wrote down in your notes that we should be talking about that I just didn't know to ask?
I really should have organized them better because I feel like they were all really important. I mean, some were like middle of the night notes. I'm like, oh, I need to talk about this. I know we talked about staying in contact with them and setting those boundaries. If anybody's not teaching online like we do, but their school districts are going to an online or they're in charge of it, you do have to set those boundaries. And you mentioned it of, you know, parents will respond to emails within 24 hours, unless, you know, it's over a weekend. And we stick to that too. You have to respond within 24 hours, even if it's, I don't know. And that's something I've sent before. I'm like,
let
I don't
me find out.
Exactly. I'm working on it. So just letting them know that they were heard is important, but setting those boundaries, because I know my first year, I would try to answer the email as soon as I got it. And it might be at 5, but I come back up to my computer and I'm trying to, but you,
I even email off of my phone because I was doing that. So I was like, I gotta set some boundaries for myself. So
I am bad about it. I don't have my school one. I have the K-12 one. I'm like, okay, that one's different. That's not the families, because yeah, I had to, because it is. It's between these hours. And then I had to watch myself. I'm like, if you're working at midnight, you don't respond to somebody at midnight, because they don't need to be getting that at midnight, even if they don't see it. So setting and sticking to those boundaries. You know, owning your mistakes, I think that goes back to being open with them. And I've had to do it before. I'm just like, I am so sorry. I'm not a math person, but that was the wrong answer. And this is what the answer
I've
is
done
now.
That too.
In the middle of teaching with students, like, that's not right. Like, you know what? It's not. And I'll joke with them. I'm like, I was
You're
testing
correct.
You.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job. But yeah, it's.
You
it's
caught it. Anytime there's a typo, they're like, there's right. a typo there. I'm like, way to go. You found it. That's your editing for today.
That was the scavenger hunt we were doing. Yeah, that's something I've learned, and it's hard. It's hard to do because as humans, we don't want to be wrong, but I am sometimes. But I think another big thing, though, is with the communication, whether it's email or text, not so much in person, but it's letting them know, like being predictable with it. Like you're saying the s'more, we use s'mores and I love that. So if you have any questions, let me know, because it's so much fun to make. But they know what they can find in there, what they're going to see. And then we also have a spot at the bottom that has the old links. And so it's predictable, but you also have to be intentional and relevant with your communication. So we've run into problems before where we were required to send like one email every week to everybody. And it became irrelevant. The kids were like, it's that email again, they delete it. Well, we actually had something new in there this time. And so being predictable with it and communicating, but at the same time, don't overload them with your emails or your texts.
Absolutely. With that, I've created a virtual classroom where I'll house a lot of those things, like the newsletter, just like a s'more link, and just update it. And then like all the little stuff that they use on a regular basis, like USA Test Prep or Khan Academy or whatever, but you can update it and it automatically updates for them. So I'm going to tell them to make it their home screen if possible, or if nothing else, a favorite to where they can go to it, but I can change it. And so around like Christmas time, I'll change it to my Christmas Bitmoji and put up like a little tree and stuff like that. And then, so I think that would be, or that's one way I'm going to communicate to make it different. And so it's not the same thing every time, but yet consistent. It is generally the same thing. And this is where they can find this information, but change it up every now and then. And then going back to what you're talking about with boundaries, earlier you're talking about those families that will talk for an hour. I have those families too. And most of us do. And what I've started doing is when I call them, like I only have 20 minutes. I have whatever at 1:30. And so when it gets closer to that time, I'm like, okay, we got about 5 more minutes until I have to go. What's one more thing you want to talk about before I have to go? And that's really helped with the boundaries of my families just know that my time is valuable. Let's make the most of it. And that then in turn, let me call more families. And so that way I can build more communication or have more communication with more people. So, all right. Well, is there anything else? I know we talked about a lot, but did that spark anything?
No, that's a really good idea because I started saying that, but I need to like set a timer and watch it because as you've seen here, I will go down a rabbit hole. And so I get just as caught up as they do, but you're right. When you have 60 kids that you or families you need to call, like you can't have an hour conversation with all of them. So that is a really good idea. I need to do that. But no, I've enjoyed this. I've got some great ideas. I'm excited to go explore. But no, thank you. And thank you for doing this.
Oh, no, thank you.
Very relevant to our time right now is that people need to know and they need to hear how it is in a virtual school.
Yeah.
Either homeschooling or schooling at home or brick and mortar
schooling. And how communicate virtually. Yeah. Because it's so different than in just a classroom. So, but I remember now when I was in a traditional school, emails were such a struggle because I rarely sent them because I would just either talk to them on the phone or in person at the drop-off line or pickup line, wherever. So, but yeah. But thank you for hopping on. I appreciate it. As I wrap up season 2, I'm feeling a little bit emotional, probably the prego hormones. But it's been a real honor, and even though I do plan on coming back for season 3, it's going to be a while just simply because I am growing a human right now who's going to enter the world in April 2021. But I want to just share some stats with you. I wanted to just say thank you for the 2,600 downloads as of before this episode was launched. And also I want to thank everyone from around the world because there's listeners in every single continent. So from North America to Europe, Asia, and then all the way down to New Zealand. So thank you. No matter where you're at, what language you speak, I'm grateful that you're a part of this journey, you're a part of this community. And even though season 3 is coming later on, I hope that you'll find me on Instagram or Facebook and follow the podcast there because I plan on being active between now and then, season 3. So sharing ideas, tips, and tricks and other strategies because now I'm a teacher trainer and I see a lot of things across the country, not just from my little school that I used to work for. And so I'm excited to bring those to you and through this podcast and bring more voices. And so please follow the social media because I want to stay in connection with you. And when season 3 does come back, I want you to be a part of it. So thank you again for all that you do. And have a great rest of your school year. And I hope to see you on the social media platforms. But until we talk again, as always, be brave. Take a risk, but above all, have fun. Bye, guys.